All right, we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and we'll just read from verses 12 onwards, and then we'll spend some time thinking about what that passage would mean for us today. So let's begin. Remind ourselves the Apostle Paul is writing to a troubled church who's still trying to figure out the Christian life, and they need grace upon grace just to give them help to figure this out together as a community of believers. So the apostle writes, "For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all were made to drink of one spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, 'Because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body,' that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, 'Because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body,' that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God arranged the members of the body, each one of them, as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I have no need of you.' Nor again the head to the feet, 'I have no need of you.' On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffers together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. Now you are the body of Christ, and individually members of it. And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, help administrating and various kinds of tongues. Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Do all work miracles? Do all possess the gift of healing? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret?" Listen, as we think about this passage and what it might mean for us, I'm reminded of a time where I dabbled in a bit of touch rugby, just a bit of social fun with a work that I was doing at the time. We put together a team and had a bit of a run around on the field. But I quickly noticed that, you know, for as much fun as it was to have a run around on the field, some players just seem more able than others. You know, some players that you're teamed up with, they just have the ball all the time, and they seem to be able to do things that you did not know the human body could do. They run, they step, they're scoring tries, and you're sort of just wondering, what am I supposed to do on the field? You know, I hardly ever see the ball, and I try and run as fast as I can, but I can't keep up with all the others. It just seems like some members of that team have got more opportunity, more public gifts, more chances to do the recognizable stuff that everyone applauds, and some of the others just don't. Some of the other players just get overlooked and never get the ball. Corinthian church started down this kind of path. Some in the church had very evident public gifts and abilities, and they elevated themselves over others with less visible gifts and abilities. And those that were less gifted, you know, they didn't do all the good moves in public and all that sort of thing, they became marginalized. They became overlooked. And they started to doubt their value and their contribution to the Christian community. So what I'm hoping to do this morning is to look at the way in which the apostle addresses this very issue. Because in doing so, we'll discover something very important that relates to the way that we pursue and exercise the particular gifts and abilities that God has given each and every one of us. There's a lesson here for us. So Paul addresses this issue by giving us a picture or a metaphor of the healthy Christian church and how the members of such a church are supposed to relate to one another. How is a relationship supposed to work together in a healthy church? If you take a look at verse 12, he says this much, that the metaphor for a healthy church and the inner relationships of that church is like this. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. That is to say, a healthy church and healthy relationships within that church is depicted as a human body. That's quite an ordinary metaphor. He didn't reach out into space and grab something that we're unfamiliar with. He just says that the church, a healthy church, is like a human body. And the relationships will have a metaphorical image in that. Like the church being like a human body, it needs arms. It needs legs. It needs a spleen. It needs kneecaps. It needs saliva glands. Just ordinary things that make it function well. And all these different parts, they all work together toward the common good. It's a metaphor, right? If you think about the human body, it's a metaphor that stresses the importance of each individual part within the context of the unified whole. It doesn't lay all the emphasis on the knuckles. It is the importance of the individual in the context of the greater unified whole. And he says that very emphatically when he says, all the members of the body, though many, are one body. What this means for us in our practical experience of a church life together is this. When we go to church, we should expect and anticipate to find people that are different from ourselves. We should expect and anticipate that much. That there will be people with a different role to fill. People with different gifts and abilities. People with different political views than our own. People that will find different things interesting and stimulating. It is so because we are not all the same body part. The arm doesn't perform the same function as the tongue, and the liver doesn't perform the same function as the toes. They are different. So we just want to pause for a moment. If Paul is telling us that this is what church life is like, that its metaphor is a human body, we just want to pause for a moment with Paul and just think about this. That the healthy church is one of great diversity amongst its members. And yet it is a unified body. It is diverse in its members, but it is unified in its purpose and existence. And that is what a healthy church is, isn't it? It's the greatest of all institutions that the Lord gives, where people from all walks of life, from every skill and ability, from every interest group, can actually sit side by side and receive the welcome and grace that Jesus extends them. That can happen in a church. That is what a healthy church is. And in many ways, all healthy churches reflect and work toward and aspire to be more like this kind of ideal that the apostle is talking about. To be this diverse yet unified group of people. That said, Paul knows of at least two ways in which the Corinthians have been sabotaging and subverting progress towards a healthily diverse yet unified church. One kind of person in Corinth subverted progress towards this kind of church by saying, "I'm just a nobody. If I don't come to church, nobody would notice." Others subverted progress towards this kind of church by saying the very opposite thing. They were saying, "I'm the rock of this church. If I don't turn up, everyone's going to notice." So subversion of a healthy church community was taking place in two ways. One person was downplaying their importance in the church, and the other was overinflating theirs. And so let's take a look at a closer look at each of these. One person who downplayed their importance and the other who overinflated theirs. Let's take a look at these. Now, the first we're considering are those that downplayed their importance. They're depicted in verses 15 and 16 as those who were harassed by this thought. When they wake up on Sunday, they might be thinking this: "Hey, because I'm not the hand, I don't belong to the body. And because I'm not the eye, I don't belong to the body." These believers might still regularly attend a church, but they feel that their faithful presence and fellowship with others and the input that they offer just isn't really important or meaningful to anyone. So as they look at their contribution to the fellowship in the name of Jesus, they look at what they are able to contribute and they think, "Man, this is like dust compared to the gems that some of the other people are bringing on Sunday. Is it even worth me being here?" These are the kinds of thoughts that these people might be harassed with. You know, to translate it into our context, we can imagine someone thinking, "Hey, because I'm not the ministry leader, or I'm not a pastor, or I'm not the one being visibly successful, you know, in my business or in my private life or in my marriage or whatever it is, because I'm not getting accolades from anyone, or I'm not publicly visible, or I'm not doing something as ably as someone else is doing, that I don't have anything meaningful to offer anyone else." You see, it is a bit like entering into a bit of social touch rugby, but our on-field God-given ability is vastly different and sometimes entirely eclipsed by someone else who just outshines us all the time. And so for these folk, the temptation is to downplay whatever good God has given for them to do and whatever He's actually gifted them to accomplish in the church. They downplay that by constantly comparing themselves to someone else whose gifts and abilities they wish they had, whose gifts and ability seem to be making more of an impact, whose gifts and ability attract more public attention. And in doing this, downplaying our God-given gifts and negatively comparing ourselves to others, it's a sure way to subvert progress toward a healthy church that is diversely gifted and yet unified. And this is what was happening in Corinth. The other way in which people subvert progress towards being a healthily diverse yet unified church is by overinflating their own importance. They overinflate their own value and importance in the church life. They think too much of themselves. They're the players who refuse to pass the ball. They just try and win the game all by themselves. In verse 21, Paul imagines them cultivating this attitude within their hearts. Verse 21 says this. He imagines them having this conversation in their head. I have no need of you. That's the kind of attitude that they're cultivating in their hearts when they look towards their fellow Christian. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Or the head to the feet, I have no need of you. I don't need you. That's the attitude being cultivated by these folk. And Paul would just have us know, if we cultivate this kind of attitude in our hearts, we end up poisoning the soil of our relationships with one another. And then, in turn, we'll just find it difficult to accept that there might be someone else at our church that has something meaningful to contribute, both to ourselves and to the wider church. We'll find it difficult to accept that there might be someone else who could benefit us spiritually. So these kinds of people have a mentality that whatever the church needs, they will provide. Whoever needs help, they will rescue. Whoever is broken, they will fix. In a sense, the people who cultivate this attitude in their hearts, that I have no need of you, they are trying to live out the same temptation that was offered to Adam and Eve in the garden of old. The temptation to be godlike, to have no need of anyone else, to be like God who does not need. They want to be like him. No need for anyone else. But I just ask you just to take an honest moment. Just ask yourself, what Christian do you actually know that's been gifted that way by God? I mean, what Christian that you know has been so profoundly blessed and perfected by God that they don't actually need other Christians in their lives? Who do you know that's like that? I know of no Christian that's been gifted that way, and all of church history will agree. There is not a single Christian that has been so profoundly and blessed and perfected by God that they do not need someone else in their lives, a fellow Christian to journey with them. We all have a need of one another. So if we yield to this temptation where we no longer desire or feel our need for other Christians to be deeply involved in our lives, we will subvert progress towards becoming a healthy, diverse, yet unified church body. You know, at this point, I do want to make a further point just about those who take the attitude, I have no need of others. People who take that view towards other Christians, that I don't need other Christians, I don't need to meet with them, I'll just do my own thing on the weekends. You know, over the years I have heard and met a number of people who want to call themselves Christian people, but no longer commit to or regularly attend any local church, even though there are good churches available to them. I meet people like that. Now, just as a caveat, I'm not talking here about people who back away from churches for other reasons, you know, for relational hurts. They've been wounded by a congregation or their pastor or whatever it is. There's a relational struggle there. I'm not talking about people who might have legitimate needs to just step away for a small season while the Lord addresses some things and heals some relationships there. I'm talking about people who willfully just drop out of church, who have grown comfortable to think of themselves as Christian with zero intention, desire to become an active contributing member of a local church. It seems that they've slipped into the same overinflated sense of their own importance, where they no longer need other Christians in order to flourish in the Christian life. They think they can go it alone, without input, and expect to succeed. But this too will surely subvert any hope that we might have of experiencing a healthy and diversely gifted yet unified church community. It's like we sabotage our own hopes and dreams of being part of a healthy church by saying, I don't actually need you. All that we aspire the church to be, a place of acceptance and love and grace, where we can walk the Christian life together. All that we hope, we actually work against it by saying, I'm not going to be part of that. I'll criticize it, but I won't be part of it. That seems to happen when we start to think, I don't need other Christians in my life. So let's just ask this question. What help is there for Christians who both those who downplay their own importance in the Christian community and those who have an overinflated sense of theirs? It's interesting that the apostle would offer them both the same answer. He says, you both need to hear the same thing. Verses 18 and 24, he says to each of them in turn, to those who downplay their importance, he says, remember this, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them as he chose. And to those who have overinflated their own sense of importance, he says to them, you need to remember, it's God who's composing the body. It's God's work. He puts it together as he pleases. So each one of them needs to remember that it's God who puts the church together. And behind each believer that gathers in a church, behind each gift that's contributed, there is God. There is God with his infinite wisdom who says, yeah, that piece belongs there. That person belongs there. It's his wisdom at work. And this is good news for those who doubt their importance and those who have overinflated theirs. Because God puts the church together, those who downplay their importance and contribution must come to realize there is no such thing as an unimportant Christian in a church gathering. Every believer matters and has something good to offer. No matter how small or how frequently overlooked you are. To use the metaphor of the human body as Paul did, it is good to remember this if you feel overlooked and unimportant in the Christian life. Remember this. A healthy, fully functioning, and beautiful body still needs earlobes and nose hairs. We can't all be the eyelashes. Every diverse part is needed to form and constitute a healthy body. So in short, you might feel unimportant and overlooked, but your presence, your gift, your ability, your contribution, your input, it might be providing a vital function to the church. something that it doesn't even give thanks for. I never think about my spleen and what it does for me. I just assume it'll just keep doing that till one day it won't. But it plays such an important part. Some of you feel about the Christian life that way. Just know that you are providing a vital function. So whether you feel it or not, you are important to the health of the whole church. Therefore, I just ask of you, if you feel overlooked, don't withhold your gift. Don't withhold yourself and your presence and all that you bring from the wider church body. It needs you. It needs what you bring as much as you need them. And secondly, because God puts together the church as he chooses, those who have an overinflated sense of their own importance and feel no need for other Christians must come to realize that to faithfully follow Jesus is to receive his invitation into tangible local communities composed of others who follow him in the light of Scripture. You see, your participation and involvement in a local church is an expression about what you believe about Jesus. And I just want you to remember that even Jesus, the truly faithful and obedient one, surrounded himself with a community of people and entrusted his mission to proclaim the gospel throughout the known world to others. And if Jesus is willing to commit himself to community this way, why would you do any less? Or have you outgrown Jesus? That's what it comes down to. The invitation is here for us to just consider, will we follow Jesus into community alongside others who are endeavoring to do the same? And in doing so, will we leave a little bit of elbow room for others with different gifts from our own? It may be that God has placed someone in your church community whom you have long overlooked, not given thanks for and eclipsed, but both your contributions to the church is needed to help it flourish and make ongoing progress towards becoming a healthy, diversely gifted, and yet unified church body.